So welcome to Street Hypnosis. This is session two of the masterclass entitled How to Use the Distraction Method to Secretly Influence People's Unconscious Mind and Give You What You Want. Now, in the previous session, we spent time really unpacking the background, the intellectual ideas behind how we can influence, persuade, and change people quite covertly using these hypnotic principles. And today we'll be looking more at the actual methods you can use. Before we dive into the methods themselves, let's have a quick summary of the highlights of what we dealt with in session one, just to refresh your minds, because these are the concepts that we're going to develop today in terms of what we'll be using them practically with. Remember, everything that we have covered here, everything we're doing, flows from the very basic principles, the two master keys, ABS, which is the three-step trance process, attention, bypass the conscious mind, and stimulate the unconscious, ABS, and ASP, the access state principle, basically meaning if you want change to change people's minds, change their moods, and their minds will follow. The English Army, I think, used to call it the Hearts and Minds campaign. Get their hearts and their minds will follow. Now, in terms of what we're focusing on here in the distraction method, the background to this is you need to understand that you get what you focus on unconsciously. So your job, our job as hypnotists, is to focus the unconscious mind on certain things whilst distracting the conscious mind so that it can't interfere with the process. Because usually it's the interference which stops things from happening naturally or stops the good things you want to have out of hypnosis from occurring. The second thing that we dealt with in the previous session is if you have a conscious and unconscious conflict, in other words, a conflict between what you're focusing on consciously and what your unconscious mind is focusing on, the unconscious mind will win every single time. You'll make worse decisions, and very often, people tend to reject ideas and solutions automatically. That might be the very ideas or solutions that they need, not because of any inherent problems with those ideas, but because rather it's an expression of the unconscious conflict that they're trying to resolve. So that it really means that if you want to do anything with other human beings, as a role as a human being, you need to learn the basics of influencing, whether you're a teacher, a parent, a mentor or some kind of business leader, if you're a manager, a coach, or even a therapist, these are all roles that require you to interact with other people and will at some point or other have a clash with some kind of unconscious negative programming. At that point, you need to know how to resolve the conscious and unconscious conflicts in order to be able to create a positive influence or persuade someone or even help them make positive changes in their life. And that's what we were focusing on today. Now, finally, there were two questions that we kept coming back to during the course of the first session. And these are questions which are still as relevant today. The first question was, where do we need the unconscious attention to be? Where do we need the unconscious attention to be? This is a question that we will be focusing on answering in today's session. The second question was, where do we need the conscious attention not to be? Where do we want the conscious attention to not be? And this, the answer to the second question, is very simple. Whenever you see a negative state, an end state arising in someone, that tells you it's time to distract the conscious mind. It's time to take the conscious mind away from this point of focus into almost any other point of focus. And we looked at in session one, where can you, what kind of things can you use to distract attention? We can change our focus through awareness. You can take their attentional position from the first, second, third, or fourth position. You can move their internal awareness, external, or vice versa. These are all different things you can do, but ultimately, anything that distracts the conscious mind away from what it happens to be focusing on when it enters an end state, a negative state, will be a useful step forward. Whatever happens after that will tell you what the next step will happen to be. So, That's the background, the highlights of the stuff that we covered in the first session. Keep those in the back of your mind as we go into the meat of what we were doing today. Because we're focusing today on basically two segments, influence and persuasion. Influence and persuasions are very related to each other, but there is a slight evolution that happens between one and the other, at least in the way that I'm using them in the context of this masterclass. Now, going back to session one again, we focused on distraction methods. That's the A and B part of the ABS formula. Remember, we need attention, we need to bypass the conscious mind, and we then need to stimulate the unconscious mind in order to be able to create a hypnotic context to influence, persuade, and create changes in people. So, using that master key, ABS, we've dealt with the distraction methods you can use to bypass the conscious mind. And at the same time, take their focus to a new place. In other words, their attention and the bypassing of the conscious mind has been taken care of. Now we need to add the last part of the formula, ABS, which is stimulate the unconscious mind. We need to ask ourselves, how can we stimulate the unconscious mind in order to make things that you wanted to have happen, happen? The main idea that I want you to think about in terms of today's session is the concept of seeding ideas or seeding suggestions. This is going to be the main influence method that we're going to be developing during the course of this session. So let me just ask you guys, what do you think I mean by the concept of seeding an idea or seeding a suggestion?
Starting something off and letting the person develop that within themselves.
Excellent. So you basically start something off and then let them run with the momentum so they're formulating their own answers, their own solutions, etc. Right? Okay, that's excellent. That's one version of seeding a suggestion. And it's actually a very elegant thing to do, particularly if you're in the field, as I know you are, Sean, of personal change, hypnotherapy, that sort of thing, because that develops what's called generative changes. So sometimes you can create a change, but it's only a little change which only happens in one specific context. But when you do what you've just suggested doing there, Sean, the unconscious mind takes responsibility for the whole change that happens and all the solutions that are developed. Not only are the solutions more elegant because they fit that person's unique personality and their unique situation in life, but it also has a tendency to overlap into other areas where similarities can be drawn. In the same way as you, once you learn how to open one door, you learn how to open pretty much any door in the world. So your unconscious mind will extrapolate from these learnings in this specific context that you've helped someone change in. And assuming that you've done this, in other words, you've let the unconscious mind run with the solutions itself, it will actually create a kind of underlying pattern of change that can influence it in other areas of life. And this, by the way, Sean, is what we'll be focusing on in the final session, session number three, which is how to make more concrete changes in people's behaviors and their feelings, etc. So that's very good. Now, in terms of the influencing method, which is, if you like, influencing someone at an earlier stage, before they get to the point where they need to have more personal change work being done with them, seeding ideas basically means that you open the mind to take on board an idea that in other situations it might otherwise have rejected. So you preempt possible problems and you bypass them by seeding the ideas and following the formula that we're about to look at. Now, the objective in any kind of influence, especially kind of covert influence, is to make it seem or make it appear to the other person that it was their own idea to think in this way or to do this particular thing. This also, by the way, is very useful going back to what you said a moment ago, Sean. If you are looking in terms of more personal change, even then, if you can make it that they think it was their idea all along, that they solved the problem themselves all along, that, although you may get less credibility or less kudos from that, is actually the most elegant way to create change in people because they then take responsibility for that change and they're empowered to make future changes rather than becoming addicted to you as a therapist to have to come back for more and more changes in the future. Okay? So your objective, whether it's in change or influence or any kind of environment, is to make it seem like it was their own idea to make this change. The influence method, or the formula we're about to run into, is something that you should use pretty much in any situation where there might be some kind of resistance, but before there's any kind of conscious objection to the theme, the ideas that you're presenting. If a conscious objection comes up, if they say, I've got a problem with this, or the first words out of the mouth is, for example, someone comes to you as a hypnotist and says, I can't be hypnotized, or I don't want to be hypnotized. If you're a hypnotherapist, that kind of can create certain problems, right? The method we're about to use right now is not designed to solve that situation. It's what we will look at right afterwards in terms of persuasion. That grows from the influence method. So this is a method designed to basically go through the back door inside someone's mind, leave a present, leave the ideas, let them flourish, as Sean so nicely suggested, so that by the time you decide coming through the front door, you're a welcome guest. The idea is already understood, it's already rooted inside their mind, and has been developed in a certain way so that it's not only expected, it is desired. Let me give you an example of how I first came across the influence method that we're about to unpack for you. It's actually something that happened to me. It's a few years back, maybe 5 or 6. This is when I was first becoming a full-time hypnotherapist, professional coach, etc. I remember I was having a conversation with an uncle of mine who is a very famous doctor in Austria. He's a very good doctor. And he's also very interested, has a very open mind, very curious about alternative medicine and alternative approaches to Western medicine. And I remember talking to him and mentioning to him my dislike of basically drug therapy, how a lot Western medicine has a tendency to give you prescribed drugs to solve whatever problems you have. And I have a personal tendency, a personal policy of not taking any drugs. If I have a headache, I don't start taking headache tablets. It's got to be really kind of critical conditions before I would take any kind of medication. And he listened, and somewhere along the lines, he made just a little side comment along the lines of this analogy, which is to say, he's saying basically the way he looks at drugs in medicine is that they have a role to play in the same way as a plaster cast has a role to play when you break your leg. It basically supports your leg to allow the body to heal itself enough so that it no longer needs the support. Then you take the plaster or cast off, and your leg carries on healing on its own. If you never take the plaster cast off, you're actually damaging the leg even further. If you don't put the plaster cast on in the first place, the bone never has a chance to set properly because when you keep moving it, it will keep re-breaking itself or it'll heal in an awkward position. And that's how you would use drugs. In other words, it's designed to stabilize the body until your own metabolism is strong enough again to be able to maintain itself, at which point you no longer need it and you move on to other therapeutic approaches. Now, this was an analogy that he threw in literally just a minute or so whilst we were just talking about all kinds of different things. And I totally forgot about this. Then, about 2 months later, we were having another conversation, and I don't know how this came up, but the topic of Western medicine and drugs in medicine came up again. And I said to him exactly this same thing. And I thought this was my idea. I totally was convinced that when I said to him, you know, I think that drugs are all well and good, but they should only be used as a sort of support mechanism until the body's ready to take care of itself, and then you should get off the drugs as quickly as possible again. And he laughed at me, and I thought, why is he laughing? He said to me, well, I don't know if you realize this, but I gave you that analogy. That's my analogy. That's the one I use with my patients all the time. And it wasn't until I really thought about this that I suddenly remembered that previous occasion. This got me to thinking because I know that Erickson, the world famous hypnotherapist, did a lot of this sort of stuff. He would plant little ideas in people's minds and not develop them until much later on when they were ready to handle these ideas. So when he planted the seeds of a suggestion, it was in a position where, had he made the full suggestion, it would have been rejected. But just by casting a little bit of doubt here or by a little implication there, it gave the unconscious mind a chance to work on an idea to make the main idea more acceptable when he actually came round to presenting it in its full glory. And this is what we want to be doing today. We're going to look at a method that will allow you to present ideas in this way so that the unconscious mind takes it on board. And by the time that you present the full idea, the full method, well, they'll be ready for it. They won't be rejecting it automatically because, for example, they may have negative states attached to it and they're afraid of it. They'll be ready to accept the idea as a new idea, as a fresh idea, with all the positive associations that you're attaching onto it. So let's look at this in a concrete way. What is the method of influence that we want to talk about or we're going to be practicing today? There are four steps to this method. The first step is to seed the idea, to present the suggestion in the first place. We'll look at some ways of doing this in a moment. The second step is to distract the conscious attention. So in step one, you've actually got some element of conscious attention on the idea. In step two, you immediately distract the conscious mind away from it. This is something we've been looking at in session one. Step three is to reorient them to some kind of resource, typically a positive state. And step four is to reiterate, to repeat the process, cycling through the first three steps over and over and over again until the mind is ready to handle the main idea, or they actually more elegantly present the very same conclusion to you because you've given them enough points for them to be able to connect the dots inside their own minds. So that's to say, basic process. See the idea, distract the attention, reorient them to some kind of resource, and then reiterate, repeat the process until they're cooked, until they're done. Does that make sense so far to everyone?
Yep.
Yeah, it does.
Okay. So now let's look at each of those four steps and look at some things you can practically do in order to make that happen. Step one is seed the idea. How can you seed ideas with people? Well, there's basically a sliding scale, if you like, as a continuum, going from all the way from being blatant and very direct on one end, to being very indirect and very subtle at the other end. Starting with the subtle end, you can use things like hinting or implication. You can hint or imply that a certain thing is or is not the case. But then distract their conscious mind before they have a chance to think about that fully and either reject or accept the conclusion. This allows the unconscious mind to do that work. You can also presuppose or use your non-verbals, your attitude, your language, your tonality, your behavior to reinforce a certain idea, a certain way of doing something. There's a very elegant example of this, for example, from Erikson's work, where he worked with a woman who I believe had an aversion to sex. She thought it was a bad thing. Her mother had always told her it was a bad thing. But this, of course, created problems dating and later on marrying. So Erikson actually planted a beautiful seed in trance and hypnosis when, during one session, he went through the whole hypnotic process, had all kinds of interesting suggestions being made. And somewhere along the lines, he commiserated with this woman that she lost her mother while she was so young. And he made a passing comment saying something like, "It's a shame she never got to complete her education of you." And he moved on. So all he did was he created the seed, the idea. Your education, she never got a chance to finish teaching you everything she wanted to teach you. Then in subsequent times, he built on that idea, that implication, if you like, to the point where she came up with a conclusion, yes, well, maybe she didn't finish my education. Maybe when she said that, kissing boys is bad, that's for appropriate for a 12-year-old girl, but not for a 20-year-old girl. I wonder what she would have told me now that I'm 20, that I'm older. And that created the doorway for the whole therapeutic change that he later on ended up doing. So that's a very elegant way of implying or using implication in order to open the doorway, to seed an idea, a suggestion. But not everyone is as attached, if you like, to a negative idea or negative belief systems. So you can sometimes be much more direct. And a very eloquent way of doing something is very often to state your suggestion outright. Say, for example, you're going to go into a very deep and pleasant hypnotic trance today. And then, before they have a chance to analyze or criticize the information, that statement, you distract their attention to something completely different. You might tell a story about someone. You might get them to focus on something. You might ask them a bit of personal information. Any of the distraction methods we talked about in session one will do. The point is, you've presented a suggestion. It is in consciousness. So in other words, the unconscious mind is giving some kind of primacy of attention to it, because anything that you have in your conscious awareness, your unconscious mind will have to respond to also. But because you distract conscious attention from it so quickly, the only part of the mind that can properly analyze and follow through on the implication of what you've said is the unconscious mind, which is what you want to influence in the first place. So you can use a direct statement, you can use stories and analogies, you can even use rhetorical questions, and a rhetorical question is a question which either implies its own answer. In other words, you don't really want someone to answer it. I mean, who wants other people to answer all their questions all the time anyway? That's an example of a rhetoric question. I'm not expecting you to answer it. I'm just expecting you to agree with the implication that the question is asking or the question is presenting. So do you get an idea of how to seed ideas? You can be very direct about it. You can be indirect about it. It doesn't matter what end of the continuum you're on. That is more a question of context and the person that you're with than being able to say exactly you must always be indirect or you must always be direct. Do you understand the idea of how to seed suggestions, seed ideas?
Yeah, I think so, yeah.
Okay, there's a slight hesitation there.
So I suppose it doesn't really matter how you seed it, as long as it's linked with the distraction, as long as the two work well together, as long as the seeded idea works well with the distraction method, that's what I'd be aiming for, is it?
That's exactly right. Now, the reason I'm not giving you a hard and fast rule saying when to be indirect and when to be very direct is basically because that's where experience comes in. There will be times when you will make a very direct, my preference is to start with testing the waters with something reasonably direct. And depending on how they respond, I'll become either less direct or more direct on the next cycle through, depending on how they respond. Having said that, people will have different styles, and you get to recognize personalities and situations which require more indirection or more direction, depending on what your experience has given you. So take that as an idea and then experiment in different places. Find out how direct you can be and still have people not realize that it was your idea in the first place, much as my uncle did with me, inadvertently. Then also try and be very indirect, imply things very subtly, and notice how many times people respond to that and what kind of people's tone respond to that. Because remember, the unconscious mind of someone who is, shall we say, a little slower or a little less on the uptake may be just as slow and may just miss your implications. If it's such a subtle hint, they might not get it at all either. So you've got to find a nice common ground between, and experience will teach you that. Okay? And you're quite right, Sean. The next step is to distract. The distraction method, depending on the context, can be very blatant. In other words, you can be a very crude distraction, or it can be very subtle. In other words, it can fit the context. And that really depends where you are at. If you're in a business negotiation, for example, you may want to be a little bit more subtle or circumspect about the distraction. If you're in a, say, therapeutic context, a coaching context, or you're teaching someone something, then you can be more bizarre, if you like, about the distraction method. You can be more off the wall because you have a little bit more social buy-in, if you like. It all depends on the situation. And of course, the more someone has a relationship with you, the more they'll get to expect that you do slightly unusual things, and they'll be okay with it because they know the result is something positive at the end as well. So it's a mix between your own personality, how you normally interact with people socially, and the context, how much is accepted in that social context, and of course the outcome that you're trying to create. In terms of the distraction methods themselves, these have been covered in session one, so just go back to those and refresh your mind on those. Third stage is reorient to a resource. Now, by this I don't mean having to go back and finding something specific like comfort or relaxation. Whilst these are good resources, The point of reorienting to a resource is not that you have a specific resource. Sometimes it will be necessary, but usually it's enough to have any positive state. Remember, we're talking about a conscious unconscious conflict where the things that someone's focusing on consciously is causing the unconscious mind to go to a negative state. And because the unconscious mind is a negative state, you end up making worse decisions, end up rejecting good ideas, you end up closing yourself off from something because you're trying to protect yourself from that negative state. So, any positive state that emerges will be a useful state to use as, like, if you like, the ground in which you plant your suggestion. So rather than leaving a negative state to arise by itself, creating a positive state immediately after the suggestion or the seed that you've planted allows that seed to take root in fertile ground. And again, you can do this in any ways. The distraction, by the way, can be the very process that leads to the reorientation towards a resource. So the distraction could be, in a normal conversation, you telling a new story, perhaps telling a joke. Humor is great because as they're laughing, they're creating very positive states. You could use reframes, maybe tell a story that changes the way someone looks at a certain situation. You might just introduce a random topic, perhaps, for example, talking about a hobby that they really enjoy. Whatever you're doing, the point of reorientation stage is to bring them to some kind of resource state. Any positive state will do. One of the keys I want you to remember here is something that we've mentioned many times in the previous masterclasses, and that is your tonality. If they do go into some kind of slump, some kind of negative state, remember, don't talk about the resources in the same tonality. Change your tonality to something better so that they have your tonalities become trigger points for good and bad states. And that way you can create, as you did learn in the covert trances section in the previous masterclass, you can then create changes just by shifting tonality at the right time. Do those three steps make sense?
Yep.
Yes.
Okay, good. Now, fourth stage, of course, is just to reiterate. You're now going to cycle through the process. We're going to look at why we do that a little bit later on, but putting it very quickly, don't expect you to go through one cycle and then you'll be done. That's it. The idea is planted and they're going to start giving you all these wonderful solutions themselves. It may well happen that way. It may well not. So be prepared to cycle through the same very covert process over and over again. And each time you're leading them to a new direction, each time you're bending the twig a little bit further and a little bit further until you get to the point where they no longer return to the old problems or the potential problems that they could have gone to. These are the four steps of the influence method. But let's face it, what we've just been talking about is pretty abstract, right? How do you put this into actual practice? That's what we're going to do now. We're going to go through a little coaching process where I'll take one of you guys and coach you through the process of using those four steps to influence someone in a context that will be useful for your own work or whatever you happen to be doing. So let's have, first of all, a volunteer to be coached, in other words, to learn to use his influence method. Who wants to volunteer for that?
Yeah, I will, Nicholas, all of
Excellent,
mine.
Sean. Thanks. And who would like to volunteer to be the client or the target for this point?
I will leave one.
Excellent. Thanks, Paul. Okay, guys. So here's what we're going to do. We are familiar with the four-step process, and of course, this is a coaching context, so Paul will be aware of the fact that we're using, if you like, covert or secret influencing tactics. So this is not so much about the outcome so much at the moment as for you to get used to the process to go through with this. Okay, so you get a kind of like a live action role play of how this might actually work in your everyday life. The first thing you need to do, Sean, is you need to choose a context, a situation, a specific situation in which you want to influence someone or plant certain ideas in someone's mind that will be useful to you in that context. Let me give you some examples. You could use this in a sales context, either to sell a product or as a hypnotherapist that I know you are, to persuade someone to come into your clinic because you can help them with a problem that they've just mentioned. You could use it in terms of hypnosis itself to present or seed the idea that they're going to go into a very deep and healing trance in a moment. You could use it in a corporate context to get people to support ideas that you're about to present, or maybe a new project that you want people to back and get behind. So choose any context, Sean, that would be useful to you in your line of work or your everyday life that you'd like to role play now, be coached how to use this influence method in.
Okay. Well, just a hello.
Yeah.
If we keep it light-hearted, then so say I wanted to go and watch a sports game with Paul, and I didn't, and he's not really into that sport. Would that work?
Fantastic. That's a great way. Although this may be something that we'll have to add stuff onto on the next pattern, which is the persuasion pattern, if you get a conscious objection. Otherwise,
Right.
this will be fine. If you get no conscious objections coming up, then this is perfect. If you do get a conscious objection coming up, then you need to add a few extra bits, which we'll add onto, if you like, at the end of this session, once we get the basic method. So would you like to
Okay,
use
cool.
that as an example, or you'd like to use something else? It's up to you entirely.
We'll stick with this then, that's all right.
Okay, cool. So you've got the context. You want to get Paul to come with you to a some kind of watch a sporting match. What sport? Just give me a sport so we can keep it concrete.
UFC?
Yeah, the Ultimate
Yeah.
Fight Championships. So the
Yeah.
martial arts things. Okay, good. Excellent. Now, the next thing you need to do, Sean, is to choose a message. You need to choose a message that fits in with, if you know Paul already, it fits in terms of Paul's ideology and creates frames, presuppositions, etc. That basically means going to see the Ultimate Fight Championships, the UFC match, is a good thing. Is something that we want to both do together. Okay? So
Right, okay.
what kind of frames, what kind of messages will be useful to get someone to come with you to this? To make it, by the way, let's make it as easy for the moment. Let's assume that Paul has no preference either way for now. He might decide that he would rather do something else, but he hasn't got a preference
Yeah.
either way. That way we can actually use the same example later on when we talk about persuasion, when there's an actual conflict, when there's an actual objection in the way. So what kind of ideas or messages would be useful to, if you like, implant in Paul's mind, which can then blossom into him thinking, hey, I'd really like to go see a UFC match.
One I'm thinking of is maybe not specific about UFC, but that me and him would have a good time. It'd be
Excellent.
kind of bonding. So.
Excellent. So we've got the frame of this is a bonding experience. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Any other frames or messages you want to put out there? By the way, that's a very good one.
I've chosen a bit of a strange idea, I suppose.
That's fine. This is good because then it actually gives us more scope to force our way to think into what we're doing here, right? Remember, before you want to influence anyone about anything, you must yourself be very clear why that's a good thing. If it's not a good thing, if you detest it yourself, if you can't think of a single good reason to do something, well, then
Yeah.
you've got to work on your own reality first. Otherwise, no one's going to join you, right?
Right, yeah. Okay, the fact that it's like a good display of athleticism is exciting to watch.
So it's exciting to watch. Excellent. So we've got bonding experience. We've got it's exciting to watch. Athletic. You can appreciate the athletic elements of it. Any other messages? I mean, why? Think in terms of now. What is it that makes you want to see this? Right? What makes you want to go to this event? And that way, you can draw out the essence of what motivates you, and see if that applies to Paul in the ways you know Paul. And by the way,
Yeah.
anything you know in terms of Paul's meta programs, you know, how he automatically makes reactions, you know, is he more towards, away from, oriented, things like that. Anything you know about Paul in terms of, or you know about influence in general, like Cialdini's, Robert Cialdini's, I think it's six patterns of influence. All these elements are things you can bring into the design stage right now, which is when you choose your message. Okay.
Right, okay.
So you have bonding experience. You have a display of athleticism. You have the emotional context, which is exciting. Any other message you want to bring out, or are you happy with just carrying those three through for now?
Yeah, I'm finding it hard to think of others, so
Okay,
okay
let's
for those
stick with
three, that's
those.
all right.
So, first round is come up with a simple and very direct way of presenting those three ideas so we have the direct side of the spectrum covered.
Right, okay. Paul?
Don't actually, you're not necessarily going to go through
Oh,
this
sorry.
yet. I just want to have all the ideas laid out so you have, you're thinking strategically, you know what the idea is going to be. Once you know what those
Yeah.
ideas are, and you have like a selection, if you like, you may even want to write these down. Then we're going to go into the element where you're going to run through this with Paul and just see where that takes you. Okay? So for a moment, let's just work the message out clearly inside your own mind so you know exactly what you're
Yeah.
going for. And then we'll go into the live element where you start putting it into action. So come up with a statement each, a very direct statement about each of those three experiences, those frames, that you can present to Paul later on.
Okay, in terms of direct then, I would say to Paul that we haven't gone out for a while together. We should meet up and catch up on old times.
Excellent. And by the way, that's actually semi-indirect as well. That's actually going more towards the indirect end. It is kind of direct. And the reason it's semi-indirect is because you haven't even touched upon the UFC. It isn't mentioned there at all.
Oh, right.
Right?
Okay, yeah.
Do you see how this works?
Yeah.
This is, by the way,
Yeah.
in other words, I'm showing you how your job is actually a lot easier than you thought it was. So,
Yeah.
a direct version of the same idea would be something along those lines of saying, let's go see the match because we'll have a great bonding experience together, or we'll get a chance to hang out again for which we haven't done for a while. That's direct.
Right, yeah.
Okay?
Yeah.
Indirect is to say, hey, you know, we haven't really done anything much recently. And then you might follow that up later on saying, you know, I had a great time when we went to see the rugby match, you know, 6 months ago. That might be a follow-up. So do you see how that
Right.
indirection allows you to iterate the process in between? How about the other two? We have excitement and we have athletic display. How might you be very direct about those two?
I would say let's go and see the match. I think it'd be really exciting.
Excellent. Okay. And finally, the athletic
Athletic
one.
and I would say it should be a really good show tonight. So and so is fighting so and so, and I think it'd be a good match.
Okay, excellent. So we have now three direct messages you can present. Now
Yeah.
let's slide this towards the more indirect element by perhaps adding some kind of descriptive or experiential reference point. In other words, getting me excited by your language. You don't have to imply things directly yet. You don't have to be completely indirect yet. But I'm talking about maybe telling a little story, maybe a little analogy, perhaps using some of the, you know, hot words. You know what I mean by hot words and power words and trance words, right? So start adding some of these things in and modify your original direct message to make it a little bit more indirect now.
Okay. So for bonding, I would say, I'd say something like, should we go, should we go and see the match? I think it'd be really good for us to meet up sometime. I'm not sure.
Excellent. Okay. Some other
Is that all right?
variations in just to offer possibilities here might be something along the lines of, hey, it'd be so awesome to hang out again and do something together. Or so that's going more for the emotional thing. Okay.
Right,
In
yeah.
other words, another thing might be you can use the whole can you imagine? Hey, you know, when's the last time you and I had a really good night out or a really good day out? Do you see how that's going more indirect? But it's also adding more of the unconscious elements in terms of the emotional aspect. And remember, ASP, act state principle. If you want to change the mind, change the mood first. So by using some of this loaded language, like power words, like tremendous, exciting, etc., you are
Yeah.
beginning to color the message. How about for the other, the athletics and the excitement thing?
For excitement, I could say we should go and see the match. It's going to be Oh, I'm really sorry, that's overwritten it.
You can be a little bit overt, that's fine. Going now, we're just sliding slightly from overt towards covert, but you can still be within the overt range. The point is, you're using language to become, if you like, more unconscious or to bring the unconscious mind more into the process. Here's an example of what I mean. Hey, watching this match is going to be the most exciting match you've ever seen. It's two absolute giants facing each other. They've won previous championships, and there's going to be the best display of athleticism you've ever seen. So now I've combined your two things together. You see
Right,
what I mean
yeah.
there? It's still pretty direct, right? But I'm using some language. For example, it's the best, it's the most exciting, the biggest. So this is language designed to appeal more to the unconscious mind because it's more descriptive. It draws them in more. Make sense?
Yeah.
Alternatives to that might be to tell a story. Like the last match, we had a 7 foot giant squaring up against some 5 foot 4 scrawny person, and the smaller person won. It was absolutely amazing to see the technique that he's applying to for a smaller man to wrestle the bigger man to the ground. Again, so
Yeah.
now again I'm combining a little bit the excitement and the athleticism, creating a frame
Yeah.
in terms of the story, a little analogy that has built into it. Do you see how that works?
Yeah.
Okay.
Right, okay.
Do you want to have a go at very indirect now? So maybe an implication, assuming some presuppositions perhaps that will assume that it's a good thing to do these things.
If it was, I was going very indirect, then just saying something like, "Oh, hey, Paul, I haven't seen you for a while," or "We haven't met up for a while."
Excellent. And then just add something onto that to give an implication, give the unconscious mind a hint in which direction it should think, along the lines of, hey, we haven't seen each other for a while. We should do something about that, maybe, something like that, right?
Right,
So you're
yeah.
not saying what it is, you're not even suggesting anything, you're just suggesting that, you're hinting something, you maybe have something on your mind, maybe there's an idea there, and it's going in a certain
Yeah.
direction, okay?
Yeah.
What about the others? What can you, how can you hint or imply or presuppose some of the other things?
I could say, "Oh, I haven't had a minute away from work lately. It'd be great to do something to really get my adrenaline going. Are you busy on the
Excellent.
weekend?"
Oh, that's fantastic. Okay. Don't necessarily ask the last question because the last question is getting asking for conscious engagement, right?
Okay,
So
yeah.
if you say, are you busy on the weekend, you're asking him to commit to something already before you've done your work. Whereas you say,
Right,
this is
yeah.
what I want, you're actually allowing him to share your experience, and there's an implication, especially if you've preceded it, for example, along the lines of saying, hey, you and I haven't done anything for ages. If you couple
Yeah.
those two together, saying we haven't done anything for ages and saying I really need to distract myself and get my adrenaline pumping. Those two will combine now to create, well, what situation will allow us to do something together and get the adrenaline running? Do you see how those how you can have parallel suggestions combining as ideas, but he will connect the dots himself. Make sense?
Yeah.
Okay, good. So you have some ideas, some messages, some frames that you can set,
Yeah.
and you can throw that. And I noticed, by the way, how that process that we just went through is absolutely crucial because now you have a sense of where you can go with the whole influence process. Before we do this process, before we think about what the message actually is, how the hell are you going to influence someone if you don't know yourself what it is you want or what's good about it? Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So this is the starting point always. Start with yourself, go first. So you now have a context, which is going to a UFC match. You have some messages that you can present. They can be direct all the way to indirect and a combination of the two. Okay. Now, here's what we're going to do. We're going to go through the first two stages of the influencing method. In a moment, I'm going to ask you to pull Paul online. When Paul's online, I want you to present one or two, no more than one or two of those messages. And before Paul has a chance to respond to them in any way, before he has a chance to comment on them, before he has a chance of saying, well, what do you mean by this? Distract his attention. I don't care how you do this. It might be along the lines of you just had an interesting thought about something, Like, hey, did you see the football match the other day? Something mundane. It might be along the lines of being more overt about this. I'm happy for you to be very overt. This is just role playing to get used to the whole thing. Like, something, for example, you might say, this is something more hypnotically overt. So, for example, you might distract attention by saying, have you noticed the temperature in your feet? And does the temperature in your feet increase, decrease, or stay exactly the same as you breathe? I was just curious about that. And notice how that is a completely random distraction. It has nothing to do with your preceding statements, and that's fine. Often conversations go pretty randomly anyway. Just think about conversations you've had with friends. They can pretty much track random thoughts. Sometimes it's even okay for them to know that you're distracting them on purpose, provided, this is the key piece, that you take their full attention into the new point, a new position. That you really take all of Paul's attention and make him think about his feet, for example, using the example that I used just now. If Paul has any element of his attention left over to think about what you just mentioned, then he might end up analyzing the statement you've made and pulling away from that. So the point is, distract him by absorbing his full attention on something. Here's a hint. Are you okay with this so far, Sean? Okay, now I'm loading you with quite a bit of information here, kind of on purpose, but that's okay. I'm sure your unconscious mind can handle this. Here's a hint on something. The conscious mind can only handle 7 plus or minus 2 bits of information, right? The magic number 7 plus or minus 2. 5 to 9 pieces of information. So if you have any hint that he might be not fully engaged with your distraction, your new point of focus, just add more things for him to think about into it. So, for example, you might just get him to think about the temperature in his feet. If you think that that's not enough, you get him to match that with his breathing. Does the breathing affect the temperature in his feet? If that's not enough, you add another layer. You might say, for example, which of the two feet is warmer than the other? And does that foot increase or decrease in temperature compared to the other foot as you're breathing? Now, notice now I've got about five or six pieces he's got to keep track of. He's got to think of two different temperatures, he's got to think of breathing. And he's got to think of the variation in temperature in each foot, which could be quite subtle, especially if you make the point to point out to him how subtle the differences might be. Make sense? You see how now I'm asking him to do many more things, which is forcing his focus away from where it might have been using the distraction method. This is a overt version, but you can use anything you want. I really don't care what it is. You could tell a story, for example. You could suddenly recall an interesting event, something funny that happened to you. I don't care what you do, provided it's those two steps. You present one or two maximum of the messages that we've just created together. Then, as soon as that message is out there, you maybe leave it hovering there for a second. It's really nice when you present a message in such a way that would you allow him time enough, you would expect him to respond to it in some way. But before he gets a chance to formulate a response or even get a sense of like, oh, I should respond to this, but before he gets a chance to complete on that thought, you distract him with whatever thing you want to do. It might be as simple as saying, look, there's an elephant, and then going on to a different story again entirely. I really don't care where
Probably
you
good.
go with this. Do you have an idea of how to distract his attention? You don't tell me what it is now, just so you can surprise us both. You have an idea of how you can distract his attention. You have an idea of what messages you want to present, right? Once you've distracted his attention, I'll come back in again and I'll give you the next piece of the process. Are you happy with those two steps for now? Okay, so bring Paul online and begin your thing.